Welcome to Imagining the Past, the 25-26 Summer Mescun, a mix of literary happenings. I'm Greg Johnston. HNSA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognises their continuing connection to the land, water and community. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. In this series of podcasts, we'll be hearing a potpourri of subjects and authors of historical fiction. There'll be some recent novel launches and a couple of wild cards. So, lay back in the sun, slap on the tanning butter, sip on something long and cool and laced with mint, and listen to your summer fling. Imagining the Past is commercial-free. HNSA is a volunteer-run, not-for-profit organisation and can only continue to produce the podcast with your support. Please consider making a tax-deductible donation through our secure website. All contributions, great or small, are greatly appreciated. On November 15, 2025, at Eltham Library in Melbourne, Wendy J. Dunn launched her new novel, Shades of Yellow. Dr. Anne Casey gave an enthusiastic invocation, followed by Wendy's response and reading from the novel.
Okay, hello again, everyone. It is now my very great joy to try and not to cry. And my privilege to introduce my darling friend, Dr. Wendy J. Dunn, and her luminous Shades of Yellow. I probably need this, actually. Sorry.
Good girl.
It's particularly fitting, of course, that we're gathered here in Eltham, because much of Wendy's novel is set in Eltham in England. I think that's a little inside joke she may not have shared with many people. So I know Wendy needs no introduction to most of you. She is an award-winning author with a long-time fascination for the history of the Tudors, yes, we know, with whom she has unearthed a family connection, in fact. Wendy is married with three sons, one daughter, and believe it or not, two grandsons. I don't know how she managed that. All of whom bring her such great joy and pride. She is the author of one non-fiction book and four historical fiction novels prior to this one. She's completely prolific. I don't know how she does it. Two of her historical fiction novels are being translated into Spanish and will be published in Spanish. So Shades of Yellow combines women's fiction, historical fiction, and metafiction. Wendy's also an academic and a teacher. She gained her PhD in 2014, and she teaches creative writing at Swinburne University of Technology. And I can say, having worked with Wendy as a literary editor and as a friend of almost a decade now, I can really truly attest to her heartwarming and overwhelming generosity as a mentor, as an ally, and as a flag waver. I'm truly indebted to Wendy as the first person to suggest I should do my own PhD, and I can truly, hand on heart, say I would never have undertaken it without her great encouragement. So thank you, Wendy. Wendy's accolades are far too many to fit in the small time we have available today, but I'm just going to mention a few. She was the recipient of the Gold and Silver Medals in the Historical Fiction Book of the Year Awards, first prize winner in the Chaucer Awards and in the Glyph Fiction Award. She's received the International Reader's Favourite Silver Medal for Historical Personage. She was a silver medalist in the Coffeepot Book Club Book of the Year Awards. She's twice been a finalist in the Eric Hoffer Award, and she has been recognised also for her work as a playwright. And despite all of this, her humility is truly breathtaking. When I asked her what she's most proud of, she said, her perseverance. I mean, seriously, there's so much. The critics and reviewers' response to this new book so far have been absolutely outstanding. So I thought I'd share with you a few of the so many words of praise she's received. So here's just one small smattering. An emotionally gripping narrative flows seamlessly from past to present with striking parallels and resonant feeling. A poignant tale of hope, determination, and the indomitable spirit of a woman who will not allow her circumstances to define her. A captivating novel that draws readers into its richly woven narrative, compelling them to keep turning the pages long into the night. And I can attest to that myself. With its profound themes and thought-provoking insights, Shades of Yellow leaves a lasting impression lingering in the mind long after the final page has been turned. Considerable skill in narrative construction, engaging the reader through the unfolding drama. A vivid sense of history, a rare work of art. The mastery and creativity of Wendy J. Dunn's writing are commendable. Her raw devotion and obligation to bring the past back to life shines through every page. An utterly captivating and enthralling novel. A compelling, heart-tugging blend of historical mystery, emotional depth, and artistic reflection. Exceptional craftsmanship in combining elements of historical fiction with contemporary literature. Wendy J. Dunn has created something beautiful, lasting, and original. This novel is a gem, just plain brilliant. That's just a tiny, tiny sample of what she's received. So huge congratulations, Wendy, on these well-deserved tributes. And Wendy is also a poet. And as evidence of this, her book opens with a poem introducing us to her Shades of Yellow and inviting us to close our eyes and see the magical world she has created for us. On the face of it, this book is about the writing of a historical novel. It dexterously interweaves the stories of the present-day author and her 16th century subject, Amy Robsart, the first wife of Robert Dudley, who came close to marrying Queen Elizabeth I. Centuries apart, these are two women suffering life-threatening illness alongside heartbreaking betrayals by their husbands. Through their stories, this book confronts enduring questions about love, hate, forgiveness, and self-determination. This book also speaks to writing as an act of resilience and of defiance. As Wendy's present-day hero Lucy notes, the thread will not break without a fight. I will not break without a fight. There are many ways to fight. My novel is one. Wendy's Lucy also recalls the words of Henry Ward Beecher when he said, "Every artist dips his brush into his own soul and paints his nature into his pictures." Shades of Yellow drips with Wendy's heartfelt soul. It offers us a fascinating window into the world of her painstaking historical research. More than this, she generously grants us a vista into her magical imagination and her deeply felt creative processes. For readers, this is the gift of seeing behind the emerald curtain. For writers, it's the benefit of Wendy's hard-won experience and dedication to her craft. We see Wendy's integrity shine through as her present-day heroine grapples with ethical questions. Do I have the right at all to give voice to a woman dead for centuries? Shades of Yellow also manifests Wendy's world-sized empathy. For as long as I've known her, her writing, teaching, and editorial work she has used as a platform for social justice. Shades of Yellow profoundly embodies this, opening up conversations on women's right to self-determination. on other issues such as same-sex marriage, on homelessness, and on Australian First Nations justice, alongside its overarching questions about despair and hope. It goes without saying that this book benefits from Wendy's exceptional attendance to literary craft, her truly authentic voice, her skill at plot and subplot, gripping dialogue, cross-referencing and subtly interpolating researched fact with fiction, foreshadowing, drip-feeding a tantalizing trail of breadcrumbs to craft both interpersonal intrigue and a deathly mystery. She shifts seamlessly between past and present, skillfully evoking each era through shape-shifting ghosts, vividly drawn characters, and mesmerizing sensory imagery. As an example, alongside a conversation about atrocities meted out on Australia's First Nations people, Wendy slips this dripping imagery. Thinking about Joe's words, she sliced a piece of lamb, blood juices leaked from it. And I thought I'd also give you a smattering of some of my favorite passages, just tiny, tiny few. So here they are. The smoky sandalwood with its taint of cinnamon seemed a heady mix of time, of memories. Her howl of grief guts me like a knife, spilling out my entrails. Drafts reached out to her, as if from the stones themselves or from ghosts. She trembled. More ghosts seemed to whisper to her. They whispered to her about the shortness of life. They whispered about death. She trembled again and yanked her coat tighter around her. A sunbeam illuminated an exquisite Victorian stained glass. The colors flitted like a drowsy butterfly over her hands and coat and the empty seat beside her until they merged into a kneeling Amy in 1560. On the other side of the living room, floor-to-ceiling windows revealed the outside meadows made golden in the gloaming's light. Clouds broke apart in the fading blue sun sky. Lower, sunlight shimmered and sparkled in the lush, wet meadow. Three deer grazed. The light of the setting sun delineated their forms and dappled its light on their spotted coats. This book is threaded throughout with Wendy's illuminating wisdom and insights, amongst many others. This particular observation has stayed with me. Few women are ever inwardly passive. You can have a think about that and bring it with you. And for anyone yet to be convinced that historical research is a stimulating subject, I might direct you to pages 307 and following, where the author's talents for slightly steamier writing are evident. Wendy, you saucy minx. I hope you have a literary agent. I think Netflix are going to be knocking. And look, at the very back of the book, at the end of her author's note, Wendy slips in this little gem. I believe imagination is what will save humanity. With work like this, I'm starting to believe she may be right. And on that happy note, I am thrilled to declare Shades of Yellow by the amazing Dr. Wendy J. Don officially launched. I hope you will shower her with love as she so truly deserves by purchasing many, many, many copies of this book. So thank you all so much for your kind attention. You will now have the great pleasure and privilege of hearing from the author herself as I invite Wendy to address you.
Wow, gosh, I don't even know how I'm going to do my speech now. Goodness. Thank you, everybody, for being here today too. It really means a lot to me. I think I've got that in the speech as well, so you're going to hear that again. Thank you, Anne, my soul sister, for your kind and treasured words that I will remember I knew you were going to say, I knew you were going to, but I'm going to, I will definitely treasure those words forever in my heart. And oh my goodness. And I am so proud to count you as one of my friends. You are so dear to me and you have been part of my journey for years. And I just, you know, you just, we need good friends in our lives. And definitely I am very blessed with some wonderful friends. I also thank you and your husband, Rory, for coming all the way from Sydney. You not only to, I mean, I was worried about winter because we've been in winter in Melbourne for a few days. And I thought you're going to come all the way from Sydney. It'll be raining and it'll, I mean, and it'll be probably snowing. And anyway, the weather has definitely improved. So that's good news.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful that you agreed to come and launch both our books. And of course, your presence here today just makes today even more wonderful. And I have to thank my mother's soul sister and dear friend, Dr. Carolyn Beasley. Last year, I was actually preparing to self-publish Shades of Yellow, and I wasn't looking forward to it at all because it meant launching another crowdfunding campaign to cover the cost. I had done this with all manner of things and it really worked out well. But it just, it's a lot of work and you don't actually like to be asking people for money in a world when there's more worthy causes than just another person's novel and everyone seems to be wanting to publish novels nowadays. So anyway, so when Carolyn said that she was finally launching Other Terrain Press as a small publishing business and that she would publish my book and I didn't have to worry about crowdfunding. Oh my goodness. I just couldn't believe that the burden just went off my shoulders and it's just been an amazing, amazing, amazing journey ever since. I can't really express how deep it's been. It's just been so wonderful. And I also cannot believe that I've had someone like Carolyn in my corner for nearly 20 years. My goodness. She is an extraordinary human being, brilliant, compassionate, steadfast in her belief in others. She once told me if I wanted to dance naked in the classroom at Swinburne, that would be okay with her. Now, I never tested that out, but I knew what she meant. She trusted my judgment to do whatever. I mean, sometimes I'm naked. I don't think so. Anyway, so she not only trusted me, but she trusted this novel. And as I say, that trust gave birth to Other Terrain Press as long as with Oscars. And having Oscar here as being the other book published by Other Terrain Press, he used to be my student. And here he is, many years later, finally with this book, which is something that we spoke about so many times over the years. I think you thought we're both mad women, but we always believed in your poetry. We always loved your work. And now we've got this beautiful work that now has been published. And I have to thank lovely Janet, who actually happens to be, we are very blessed to have her as my grandchildren's grand aunt. So I'm hoping, well, there is music gifts in my side of the family too. But to have that strengthened by a nice gene pool that Janet provides with her drink. and having her here today has just added today's magic. And I have to thank also Bonnie Mai and Simi for being such a brilliant PR team. They have worked tirelessly over, I suppose, close to a year now. At least 9 months of doing PR work, and they have been so creative, and it's just been wonderful to have two brilliant young women who have been so creative and creating things for us on Facebook and everywhere else. on top too. It's been really, really wonderful. And I want to thank each of you for being here today. Your presence means the world to me, and it's a true joy to celebrate my fifth novel with you. And I've got a passage from Shades of Yellow to read. All right, this is from when Lucy is talking to her grandfather, Pop, in England, and he's acting as her mentor. And so she's talking to him about her novel and also about reading to him a bit from the novel. So I thought that would be a nice little section for me to read.
She opened her computer. Shall I start? Pop laughed. I'm ready to listen if you're ready to read. She pursed her lips while locating the piece she wanted him to hear. This is from one of my most recent chapters, when Amy visits her husband during his imprisonment in the Tower of London. She placed her coffee on the table beside her chair. Dudley was there for more than a year after his arrest in 1553. She laughed. I suppose you already know that, Pop. This scene happens early in 1554, not long after the execution of Paul Jane Grey and her husband Guildford Dudley. The Dudleys are not only in deep sorrow about their deaths, but also grieving about the death of the head of the family, John Dudley. His execution happened soon after Mary took the throne. Princess Elizabeth is now under arrest in the Tower. She cleared her throat and began reading. I walk beside my angel, drifting in and out of light and shadows, remembering the masks of my worldly life. So many masks, too many to count. There's the mask of the dutiful daughter, the mask of a wife, and the other mask a woman so often wears, the one with hooded eyes and a mouth closed tight. In my mortal life, I learn to hide my true face here. Masks do not exist. I move restlessly within the light, thinking of my past leaves me in the darkness of defeat, and even in all this light, I still feel in the dark even now. Perchance it is one I deserve. I deliberately fell down the stairs. Though I only did it so because of Rob, because I love him. I did not mean to die. I didn't want to die. I only wanted to hurt myself to make Rob come to me. Am I wrong to love Rob, I ask? Love is never wrong. It sustains life, my angel says. It is life. But there is what you think of as love, and what is truly love. Soon your heart will understand. Understand what? I ask crossly. Sometimes I wish to block my ears and no longer hear this being beside me speak. At the end, love is all. Nothing else remains. My angel shifts the space and stretches out its wings. Amy, open your wound and rid yourself of the poison. My wound? My angel asked me to open my wound. Which one? Betrayal? Rejection? Abandonment? I want to cry. But there remains no tears for me to cry. No tears, but only an unending sea of grief. But first you must endure the night, my angel says. Endure the night? I say with more anger. Am I not enduring it? Will the night ever end for me? Rainbow light swirls all around us, and the clouds open up. London is below me. I feel like a bird flying over my dominion. Be at peace, Amy. It's time for you to return and find your new dawn. The slate sky is no longer promises snow, just more rain. With the shroud of winter gone, the last traces of snow have soaked into the earth. The thick grass growing outside the Tower of London glistens deep green in the low morning sunlight despite the dull day. Here and there cowslips tremble, their flower heads nodding. The wind blows the clouds apart for a heartbeat and the flowers turn gold. I pull my hood over my head, gather my cloak tighter to keep out the cold. I go and see Rob. Her grandfather clicked his tongue. Lucy gazed at him over the screen of her laptop. He sat across from her, stirring in his favourite chair. his aged hands knotted in his lap. "Want me to keep going?" she asked. "Of course. Just need a drink, Lou." He felt for the teacup on the table beside him with caution. She held her breath, watching him loop his finger through its handle. Daily confronted with his blindness since her arrival in England, she felt both proud and frightened at his attempts to remain independent. He insisted on making his own tea, saying his daughter, a coffee drinker, just waved the tea bag in the boiling water, tied out, mind you, and thought it done. Lucy suspected the reason he did not drink his tea straight away was to wait for it to safely cool. Holding it in both hands, he brought his cup to his mouth. "So, you'll certainly want to write a more experimental historical novel." "You mean my angel? Wonder if it's wiser for you to write a more traditional style of historical fiction." "Wiser?" Her gaze lifted to his face. Confronted by his eyes' lack of focus, she lowered her head. "Yes, wiser. It may make it harder for Eric to sell it." She swallowed. "You don't like it?" Her grandfather laughed. "Now, don't get all precious about your work. If you really want respect as a serious writer, you need to learn to take on board criticism. Not that this is criticism of your work. I'm just worried Eric won't find a publisher for it." She seemed on a roller coaster. She tightened her hold on her laptop. Eric did not say he had any problems with the angel. "Anyhow, I'm not really certain I want it published, Pop." "What?" He leaned forward, slurping his tea over the rim of his cup. He muttered in annoyance, and his cup clattered as he placed it on its saucer. "Are you seriously telling me you're writing that you have written a novel just to store it away in a shoebox under your bed? I believed you were serious about this novel, and that explained why you delayed your biopsy. I never thought you foolish, Lucy, but I'm starting to wonder. If you're not serious about this notebook, you shouldn't be here. You should be home getting treatment." "I am serious about my novel." Rain fogged up the window panes of the bay window behind her grandfather, obscuring the summer garden from view. It mirrored her depression, her sense of defeat. "Do you write a novel to be safe?" Realizing she had spoken her thought out loud, she swung her gaze back to her grandfather. He grinned before sipping his tea. "Writing a novel is never safe. It shouldn't be, especially for the writer. We don't spend a year or more of your life writing a novel and expect to be the same person you were when you first started writing it. I don't think any sane person would spend all their time writing a novel without some hope of publication at the end." He laughed. "But is any writer really sane? Not as the world sees it. We spend our days scribing the words of imaginary friends and the words of their enemies too." She laughed. "I'm not certain I want to see myself as mad just because I do that." She gulped down a mouthful of coffee. Setting down the mug, she studied her computer screen. "What is mad, anyhow? Sometimes I think what is truly insane is how so many of us live our lives dictated by the narratives handed down for centuries. We can't all live to our own rules, Lou. Those narratives are in place to prevent true chaos." "Is chaos such a bad thing, Pop?" "Perhaps we need chaos to make the world anew." Her grandfather clasped his hands again on his lap. "I'm an old man dealing with more than enough chaos. The older I become, the more my physical world boils down to this house in the garden." He turned his sightless eyes towards his typewriter. "My interior world, though, the more I explore it, it seems to me eternity itself." He grinned. "I think you've cornered me. Writers deal with chaos every time we take up the challenge of a new story." Keeping careful hold of her laptop, she leaned forward to touch her grandfather's hand. "And out of chaos, our stories are birthed. That's why we don't write to be safe. We write to make sense of ourselves and our world, don't you think?" He stroked his cheek. "You're a proper writer if you understand that. Now, do you want to read more of your novel to me or not?
Thank you for listening to Imagining the Past, the 2025-26 Summer Mesklun. Please remember to step back in time to our podcast archive, where you'll find a wealth of interviews. I'm Greg Johnston. Remember to slip, slop, slap this summer and keep reading, keep listening. It's so good to have your company imagining the past.